As we leave this life, the people who know us best, our friends, our siblings, and our children make judgments about us. Perhaps the last two groups know us the best of all. The real unvarnished truth behind the image making and the public personas we have presented to the world. They know us at our off-duty moments, our unbuttoned and unguarded times. They have seen how we react when joy and calamity unexpectedly strike. They instinctively tune into the ebb and flow of our moods. Above all, they have an unexpected take on what were the real successes and failures of our lives, what were the values that really underpinned our living. Yes, the values, because they, above all, experience the drivers that motivated us and made us tick. And that's the really interesting question that hovers over any deathbed that surrounds our own eventual departure from this world. How will I be remembered? What inheritance do I hand on? What gifts will my siblings and children decide to acquire from my life's journey and to carry on into the future? For sure, their judgment call will be a surprise to us. We give ourselves away under pressure or in the inadvertent moment. Usually it's the times that we were off guard and unselfconscious that our siblings and our family and our friends and our work colleagues have noticed and appropriated what they have decided was worth having about us. How will I be remembered? That's the question that really matters about our life. Yet we have no control over others' crucial assessment of us. We might stage manage a great deathbed scene. We might leave a judicious and generous will, but others get to decide what was worth having and keeping in our living and dying. The Jesus we've just heard about in John's Passion narrative is very much in command of the situation and the manner of his dying. We might hope to have a portion of that dignity, inner authority, and self-command when we exit this world. Even more remarkable is the way he can put his own fear, pain and exhaustion to one side in order to meet the needs of others. Lifted up on the cross, he has gifts to bestow on his followers. Having nailed him up, the soldiers take his outer garment and divide it in four. But the tunic, the inner garment, is a seamless robe that won't submit to this treatment. This garment, which cannot be torn apart, even when it falls into the hands of Jesus' crucifiers, is a symbol of those who have heard his word, the community of the disciples. The unity that Jesus has with the Father, the most precious part of his life, is now given as a gift to his followers. The gift of unity in the church is something we strive to build and retain in every generation. But at a more fundamental level, it's a gift from God. This unity is not an end in itself, but announces to the world that God has sent his Son and that God loves the world just as he loves his Son. So, on the cross, Jesus gave us the gift of unity, something for us to appropriate in every generation so that the love of God continue to circulate throughout the world. You might have noticed that when Jesus was arrested, he told the soldiers, "If you seek me, let these men go." He protected his followers, and even at the point of losing his own freedom, he made sure that they retained and received theirs. Giving freedom to those we love, not chaining them to us, no catches or fish hooks, it's what authentic love is about. Giving people the space to freely choose whom they will love and commit themselves to. It's essential in healthy religion, and it's part of what unselfish love is about. In the last night of his life, Jesus went on loving people who he knew would let him down. He trusted them enough to believe that eventually they would come back to the task of spreading God's love. And that is what is happening here. The disciples have been set free to go their way in picking up their missionary task of converting the world. It's a way of saying, "I have full confidence in you." At his death, it's reported that Jesus bowed his head and gave up his spirit. This was not just yielding up the life within him. It's the presentation of another gift to those who have gathered around his deathbed. Now the Spirit of God is poured out on the community assembled at the foot of the cross. Just before Jesus had given his mother and the beloved disciple into the care of one another, he was assembling the new family of God at the foot of the cross. As soon as it begins to form, Jesus hands over, delivers, and trusts the Spirit to his new family. The dynamic power of God, which had infused him throughout his ministry, is placed at the disposal of fragile people setting out on a mighty mission. Jesus, as it were, breathes his own inner strength into them. Then he gives a final gift. The soldiers pierced his side, out of which flowed blood and water. This life, flowing out of Jesus, is the life that feeds the infant community of faith. It's the means by which the early church experienced the absent one. It refers, of course, to baptism and the Eucharist. Baptism gives the Spirit to each believer as they begin the journey of faith within the church. The Eucharist feeds us on our journey through this world in company with the other believers until we come at last to the life of the world to come, where no more sacramental signs are needed. Genuine freedom, inner strength, family unity, these are symbolic signposts for the future life of your children. These are good gifts to be handed over at any deathbed. It's what we remember him for. These are the values and attitudes and beliefs that we appropriated from him, and the more they take root in us, the more he lives on in the world. Thanks be to God.